Hey guys, if you're struggling with maximizing midlife for any stage of your life, I encourage you to check out my new guide, the No BS Guide to Maximizing Midlife and Getting Back What Matters Most. In the guide, I cover the three core principles that have helped me to become a better man, husband, father, provider, and athlete. At 48, I've been able to simplify my life, reduce stress and anxiety, perform at a higher level, earn more, be happier, and have more fun. I wanted to share not just my why, but my how with all of you. So to get your free copy, go to midlifemail.com/no BS guide or follow me on Instagram at Greg Scheinman, where there's a link to the guide in my bio.
This is the Midlife Mail Podcast with Greg Scheinman, brought to you by Inns Group Insurance. Inns Group is insuring success. From the Gal Media Studios, here's Greg Scheinman.
Welcome to the Midlife Mail Podcast. Greg Scheinman here with you today. Jeff Fitzhugh, CEO of Rain Sunglass Company, on the podcast today. You guys know me, you follow me. You see me, I rarely have a picture without sunglasses on, not because I'm some pretentious little fuck, well, to a certain extent, but because I love sunglasses. I have a major sunglass addiction. Rain is one of my absolute favorite brands. I've been wearing them for a couple of years now. Having the opportunity to get Jeff on the show, talk to him about his career, talk to him about the brand. He's got experience at Converse, at Hurley, at Sanuk. He's a husband, he is a father, he is a successful entrepreneur and a CEO. We've got Jeff Fitzhugh on the Midlife Mail podcast today. So what am I talking to you for? Let's get into it and let's hear from him.
How do you get in touch with people? You know, how do guys, how do they say yes? You know, how many no's versus yeses do you get? Is it as simple for you as somebody that you know and kind of have some respect for that's going to said, hey, you should go do this. Like, is that how they get past your filter of what you say yes to or no to?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's interesting because you have so many people that come and talk to you and want to be part of this industry or this business that we're in. And so it's a who you know kind of industry. It's interesting. Once you're in this industry, you're in this industry. But it takes a while to get in. It's hard to get in because people can sniff out authenticity really quick and they can sniff out a fake.
And you've been in this industry for a long time.
Wow.
Is this something, did you always want to go into this industry? Consumer products, goods, brands? I mean, you've worked with some of the biggest and best brands out there.
Yeah, no. Actually, I believe it or not, I started in finance and I was in banking. After I was in that for about 5 or 6 years, I decided I was going to coach high school baseball and have fun with high school baseball because I was a baseball geek growing up. And then after that, I fell into a position at Converse and kind of worked my way up at Converse, worked with a licensee at Converse, became vice president of sales in a few years. And then from Converse, I went to Oakley. I was at Oakley for a number of years, I think just under 10 years. Worked my way up through Oakley, through the sales department there. It just kind of unfolded from there. Kind of by luck, by chance, but it was something that I didn't know my entire life. But I'm glad that it was lucky mistakes.
Again, iconic brands with Converse and Oakley. And we jumped into that, but let's backtrack just a little bit. You're a Cali guy.
Yeah.
Born and raised, right?
Yeah.
What's the Cali lifestyle to you, the vibe?
It's real. You know, it's funny. I'm born and raised in Huntington Beach. I still live in Huntington Beach. Maybe I'm afraid to go out. I don't know. And I have my own network. It's like, oh no, then I have to find a new dentist and a new doctor. But I love where I live. I couldn't imagine living anywhere else. So for me, California is just, it's just the way that I was brought up. And I see some people that move into Southern California, into Orange County where I live. It's great for them to want to live that lifestyle, and I love it. But you can kind of see, they kind of stick out a little bit at first. Mm-hmm. by the way they dress or the way they talk or whatnot. But then after a couple of years, they kind of get into the groove and kind of see it's not pretentious, it's not fake, it's just real. I mean, you go to a restaurant, nobody dresses up. I mean, it's just everything, flip-flops, or they're wearing sneakers, or they're wearing whatever they want to wear, t-shirts or a button-up shirt, it doesn't matter.
So let's talk about that a little bit, which I think is also super, super cool. The Cali kind of whole vibe, the jeans, the t-shirt, the Converse, everything else. Let's talk about the brand of Rain a little bit too. Sunglasses are crowded field.
Yeah.
I mean, lots of sunglasses out there. How did you get involved with Rain, and how does a brand kind of establish itself in such a crowded landscape and stand out?
Well, you really touched on something that's so important and so big, and that is sunglasses is a very, very crowded field. Rain has been around for 10 years. I've been with Rain for 4 years. Prior to Rain, I worked at Sanuk, which is owned by Deckers, and they own UGG and Teva, mm-hmm. a bunch of other brands like Hoka, 1-1 running shoe. But I actually stumbled upon Rain at its very first trade show 10 years ago. And I was just walking around, and I saw this small little trade show booth, and I just thought the name Rain was cool because I thought the spelling of it was really cool, R-A-E-N.
Mm-hmm.
And what I liked about it is I thought the A and the E together, capitalized, looked so cool. And so I walked up and I just kind of talked to the guys that were working there, and they were kind of, yeah, this is our new brand, it's kind of cool. And I'm like, wow, man, these are like really cool designs. And, you know, working at Oakley back in my career, I kind of know sunglasses a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what a unique take on eyewear, because it was like a modern classic, you know, almost like a mid-century modern home. You know, it was like a modern classic take on eyewear, which nobody had been doing. And so I kind of fell in love with it, and I became a fan of the brand. And I started buying their product, and I don't think I ever saw those guys ever again that were working at the trade show,
mm-hmm.
but I always stayed in touch with the brand by buying product here and there, and I always became a fan. So I got a phone call a little over 4 years ago that I should interview for the CEO position at Rain, and I was very happy in the position I was in at Sanuk. And I was like, nah, that's cool, I'm fine. And then they called me again, and so I went on the interview, and I met the group there, and I recognized, I was like, oh, it's the same guys, pretty cool. And I talked to them, they don't remember me from the trade show, because I'm kind of a dorky guy, but that's cool. And so I started talking to them and getting to know them, and I remember that initial feeling I had with the brand, you know, 7 years earlier, that I was like, what a cool idea. I mean, I identify with this.
Mm-hmm.
So then it got me to the point where I was like, I got to work for this company. So I went through the interview process, and they hired me. It's been 4 years now. And I'm absolutely in love with the company, because we are hell-bent on product, and we're hell-bent on our lifestyle. We're not going to change for anybody or anything. We do what we do, and we're passionate about it.
So the founders, and you're coming in, interviewing for the CEO position. How is that relationship, and how do you establish that connection with the founders and the brand, and kind of living the ethos all together?
Yeah, so the founders, there's two brothers. There's Jeremy and Justin Height. Jeremy is an ex-professional surfer, surfed on tour for quite a while. If you ever get in the water with Jeremy, just stay out of his way. That guy rips, and just watch him, because it's a pleasure to watch him surf. His brother Justin's a very good surfer too. And they grew up together always admiring brands, and they grew up in Oceanside and in North County, San Diego. And it's always been their passion as little kids growing up. Like, they wanted to have their own brand. They just didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So then they met their friend Jordan Percy, really, really good guy. And he's kind of more of the product guy of designing and developing product. So the three of them together started this company, you know, 10 years ago, really as a concept 11 years ago. Justin is kind of the visionary and the creative. Jeremy's more of an operations guy, and then Jordan was the product guy itself. And what they built and curated over the years is, to me, it's a magical brand. It's beautiful. It's real. It has not changed one iota since they started the company. And so the dynamics of them working together are amazing. They just needed somebody to come in and kind of run the business itself, which is where I came in. And really, you know, take this amazing brand and get it out and onto a stage to where more people could see it.
Mm-hmm. So I've been a fan of the brand for years, which is, I just think, again, so cool when you meet and you talk to somebody, again, like Aaron at Life Aid, and we're talking about other potential guests for the show, and he goes, have you heard of this? You know, like, I heard of it, like, I'm wearing them right now, you know, overall. And I also look at association in terms of, okay, well, where did I get introduced to a brand? You know, who do I look to that's got great style or is bringing new things out? And there were a couple of cool stores in Houston, Reserve Clothing Company, Stag Provisions in Austin and in Houston. And I got introduced to the brand through there. It's, you know, looking through the case, and they stand out, and you start buying them. But I've got a real personal kind of obsession with sunglasses also. And I'm really self-conscious about my eyes. I think sunglasses are like something that a guy can just put on, and they elevate your confidence and the way you feel and walk them around. When you were talking a little bit, you even referred to yourself as like, I'm kind of a dorky guy, you know, but who's a Rain guy? Like, what is that or that person or the way the brand is not going to change? Like, what's that about?
Well, that's a great question. You know, the brand was, I always say it's not a surf brand, but I say it's rooted in surf, because it did start in surf, and it started in surf accounts. But since then, the brand has really branched out, and it's in a lot of the high-end, you know, boutiques across the country now, whether it be American Rag, it's in Nordstrom, you know, it's in kind of some of the higher-end boutiques and stores across the country. So the people that are catching on to Rain now aren't necessarily surfers. In fact, the part of our business that's growing even faster is outside of surf, which is not just with men, but also with women. Where, you know, I always felt like in the early days, Rain was really a brand that had a little bit too much testosterone because it was, you know, so male-driven. Mm-hmm. But now women have been flocking to the brand, and a lot of celebrities. My goodness, if anybody goes to our webpage and looks at the amount of celebrities that are wearing our shades right now, it's unbelievable. But I think that it's just a guy that likes style, that likes a modern classic, that isn't trying to be too flashy. It's just real. It's somebody that's not trying to be fake. And somebody that, you know, like you, cares to protect their eyes. You know, I mean, that's an important part. And I think that really kind of boils down to who we really are. It's just, you know, we're not trying to be anything that we're not. I mean, that's what I love about the brand itself, is we design sunglasses for what we like. We're not trying to have other people like us that don't fit in.
So as you were talking about the brand itself and the element of style, and you put your sunglasses on right now too, what do you have a favorite?
I'm wearing them right now. The Aaron 53, A-R-E-N. Aaron,
mm-hmm.
Aaron 53. These came out at the beginning of this year. And I love, first of all, I have a pretty narrow face. Like, I do, so certain sunglasses, like big sunglasses, don't look good on me. So I always have to go and try and see what works for my face. And these just absolutely work for me, so I love these.
So, 10 o'clock in the morning now, getting ready to do this. What's your typical morning routine, also?
Okay, so I wake up, I'm an early guy. I wake up at about 3:30 or 4 in the morning. I do a quick workout where I do planks and push-ups and bar dips and things inside the house, and have a Peloton, by the way, love that thing. Then my office is in Oceanside, and I live in Huntington Beach, so it's about an hour and 5 minutes without traffic. So I get up early to beat traffic, and I'm on the road. I get to the office early. The CFO's in there. He and I usually meet in the morning. We talk about the financials and kind of the dashboard of what's going on in the business. And then it's all guns a-blazing. And we have meetings throughout the day, whether there's strategy meetings, whether product meetings, sales meetings, operations meeting. And the one thing that I can say about Rain is we are a finely tuned, well-oiled machine. We operate extremely well. And that is one of the most important things, I think, for any business to run in. And I am absolutely a sticker on this, that I want us to run extremely well. I want us to be the company that we're the easiest to work with. That retailers, consumers, customer service, whoever it is working with us, I want them to have the most grand experience they possibly can. So during the day, I mean, it's, you know, my day is filled with a lot of meetings and ensuring that we're firing on all systems.
How do you trickle that down, though? Okay, the vision that you have in your mind for what that experience is going to be for the retailer, the whole chain. How do you get that down through your team also to the execution phase? And then the second part of that is, how do you handle it if it's not going exactly the way you want?
Yeah, so my philosophy is I want everybody in that building to understand that they're empowered to do their job, that there's nobody looking over their shoulder ensuring that they're doing the right thing. They are empowered to do it. And we do it by having an elite team of people. In our office in Oceanside, we have 35 employees, I believe, and they are amazing, every single one of them. And we have built such an elite team. I love working there because I know that everyone's got my back, and they know that I've got their back. And so I always feel like, as a leader, that I'm a servant leader. I'm not afraid to grab the samples and sit in the back seat of the car and let's go. Let's do it. And I think everybody on the team understands that. So I think it starts with building the right team and then empowering them to be able to do the job.
Are there certain questions, traits, or characteristics that you look for in people before they can even get to that even next phase of consideration of the interview process or drawing?
Yeah, I have the most strange, awkward, weird interview process on the planet. And I actually learned it from my mentor. His name is Mike Parnell, and he was the CEO of Oakley. And I reported to Mike for a number of years. And I've kind of taken some of the things that he did with me when he was hiring me and kind of turned them, into what I like a little bit and kind of morphed it a bit. During interviews, I play hangman. I want them to play hangman. I want them to feel at ease. I draw maps of parking lots with stores of the entrance of the store and where you're going to park your car. Show me on the map here where you're going to park your car. I want to see how their brain's thinking. I don't necessarily want to hear them say, like, yeah, I'm a people person and I'm a go-get. I don't care. I want to know, how is their brain thinking? Do they think differently? Do they think? I don't even want them to think outside the box. I don't want there to be a box. I want people that are confident, that look me straight in the eye, that are willing to give me straightforward answers and are quick and think like no other. And to me, we have a building full of people like that, and it's one of the coolest things. And I'll tell you what, Greg, we're doing something next week that we do often that I wish more companies would do, and that is, we have offsite strategy meetings. The entire company comes to this thing. We're going to be at an amazing resort in San Diego. The entire company goes there. We're there for 2 nights, and we start off and we discuss our business, where have we been, but more importantly, where are we going, and then how do we get there. And then we break the entire company up into different groups of about 4 or 5 people, and then they go off and do breakouts and come back and pitch back to the entire company what their plan is for the next 5 years of where RAIN is going to go in the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And to me, we do this 2, sometimes 3 times a year. It's expensive, but it's well worth it because we're investing back into our employees. And when we do these offsite meetings, they come out of this feeling as though they are an important part of our company, which they are. But they're also so motivated because they understand that they are a part of our company. They're not just somebody that maybe ships products or somebody that just enters orders or somebody that just crunches numbers as the CFO does. Or no, they all have a huge, huge voice within our company, and I love that.
Has this always been your mindset? And it sounds like kind of your personal and professional relationships are very intertwined. Has this always been part of your makeup?
Yes. It's to me, it's what's enabled me to grow and been able to carve out a fairly successful career, is working well with people and building teams. I mean, I never say that someone works for me because they always work with me. And I believe that. And I have 2 mentors in my life. One is Mike Parnell that I mentioned earlier, and the other is my mom. My mom's an amazing story. She had no education, married with 2 kids, and my parents bought a house, couldn't afford carpeting for the house, they scrimped everything. Actually, they had to borrow $100 from my grandparents for the down payment. So they finally were able to afford carpeting in their house, but then they needed a vacuum, and they didn't have enough money to buy a vacuum. So my mom was relentless on my dad, like, Tom, we need a vacuum. And so, long story short, my dad said, look, if you want a vacuum, go get a job. So she went and embarked and got herself a job at a bank and worked her way up to executive vice president of one of the largest banks in the entire country. And she's been a huge influence on my life, as has Mike Parnell at Oakley. So I always felt like what they did and how they inspired people was is they worked together with teams. And it's not about them. It's about the team. And you have to put your ego in your back pocket and work well with others.
Are your parents alive still?
They are.
Where are they now?
They live in Huntington Beach, close to me. They were in Colorado for a while, but my dad's health isn't all that well. And so we moved them to Huntington Beach about 6 years ago. My mom had a stroke a little over a year ago. She's doing fantastic, doing extremely well. And my dad has a Parkinsonism, and so he's kind of dealing with that a little bit. But overall, I mean, I'm blessed, and I've lived a pretty charmed life when it comes to family.
How long did your mom stay at the bank?
Oh, my goodness. I think she started when she was probably 27 years old, and she left, I think, 2 years ago. She's 80 now, so 70. So, I mean,
you're... That's some vacuum.
Yeah, and by the way, she never got the vacuum she wanted.
And what did your father do?
My dad did outdoor advertising. So he did a lot of billboards. You know, if you drove along the freeway, he saw billboards. My dad did that for a number of years. Mm-hmm. We lived on a blue-collar income for many, many years until my mom had to work. Like I said, we didn't even have carpeting in our home. But, it was the first track housing in Huntington Beach where my parents moved to.
So what's your relationship with money? Kind of coming from a blue-collar background to where you are now.
You know, I am such a weird guy when it comes with money. I really am. And my wife always gets mad at me because, certain things I'm pretty tight, but in other things I'm not tight. Like when we're on vacation, sky's the limit. We're out here to enjoy it. Like, well, that's kind of expensive. No, it's not expensive. Just go get it. Whatever. We're on vacation. Let's enjoy ourselves. But when we're at home, it's like, nah, let's not spend there. Let's be very tight there. Let's be frugal. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there's a right answer and what kind of guy I am with money, but I guess I'm different.
Hey guys, Greg here, Forever Forward. Let's move. I have teamed up with Roan and I'm super proud to be part of such a great company and supported by such tremendous individuals. Roan is clothing made for men, and simply put, it works for me and my lifestyle. They produce clothing that brings together a seamless integration of fit, form, and function. Clothing made for everything from the gym to the office, and clothing that inspires men to live healthy, strong, and free. That's what it's all about. You want to learn more, support, and pick up some great gear from Roan and all of our other Midlife Male brand partners? Go to midlifemail.com/partners. Earlier on, you talked about the morning routine a little bit. Up when it's still dark out, 3-something in the morning, God bless you, in there. Who's at home with you?
So my wife is asleep, and then my two kids are asleep. I have a 19-year-old and a 17-year-old. So my son's 19, and my daughter's 17.
Okay, so how's that?
Yeah, they don't hear me because they're upstairs asleep, and I come downstairs, and I do my deal, and I shower and get on the road before anybody's awake. Actually, usually my wife will wake up, and I give my wife 3 kisses every morning, and then I give each kid 4 kisses every morning. It's just one of my rituals.
Any particular reasoning for the numbers?
So when I was dating my wife, I just always remembered that you put 3 espresso beans in a Sambuca, so as for good luck. And so I always gave her 3 kisses for good luck. And with my kids... with my son, he was born first. I, for some reason, always just gave him 4. And then when my daughter came along, it was 4 for her, too. So that was it.
So how did you guys meet?
Met through a mutual friend. She's from Michigan originally and moved out to California. And met her through a mutual friend at a bar. And I was totally smitten from the first moment I laid eyes on her. But I couldn't let her know that because I had to kind of play a little bit cool. And actually, we didn't get together for probably a couple weeks thereafter, and then finally went on a date, and the rest is history. We've been married now for, I should know this number, 23 years now.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah.
So, parenting to older teenagers, I have two younger teenagers in there. How do you guys raise your kids?
You know, we allow them to make their own choices on a lot of things. We trust them. My son is an extremely intelligent guy. He's got one of the most kind hearts you'd ever meet on anybody. And he has passion for history. He has a passion for computers. He's not the greatest student in the world right now. And that's okay. Because I know he will be when the time's right for him. So we kind of just work with him on, you know, what are his, I guess, goals in life. And at 19, it's hard to know. I mean, I didn't know what the heck I wanted to be at 19. So for me, you know, we allow our kids to make their own choices. My daughter, my daughter's 17, she plays competitive tennis. She actually goes to a tennis academy for high school. And she went to a public high school her first 2 years. And she said, no, I want to go to a academy and leave the public high school. And we're like, well, no, the high school's fine, honey. Stay there. But we wanted her to make her own choice. And so she did. And so she made the choice to go to this tennis academy. We supported it. And it's worked out well. So for me, I was lucky that I had parents that supported me in whatever I wanted to do. And my kids, I felt the same way. And I know from my wife, she grew up the same way, that her parents supported her and everything she wanted to do. So I think we really came together on that and agreed with them. And I have to say that I'm a pretty lucky guy, because both kids are very respectful and work very, very hard.
Does your wife work?
No.
Did you?
No. She did. She worked for Swarovski Crystal back in the day. My brother worked for Swarovski for a number of years. And so she was the Southern California rep for Swarovski.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So would you describe yourself as an introvert or an extrovert?
Extrovert all the way. But it's kind of weird. You know, before I know somebody, I'm kind of shy at heart. But once I open up, it's like the floodgates are open. It's like I'm a total extrovert. Like, I'm okay getting on stage, and I'm fine with that. But in the beginning, you know, I get big pit stains, and I'm a little bit nervous, and I don't know what's going on, and you know, I'm a little bit of a wallflower. But once I warm up, I'm an absolute extrovert.
Mm-hmm. To that effect, do you think, is that a necessary characteristic for a CEO, somebody kind of in your role?
Yeah, God, that's a tough question. I don't know. For me, it works, because I like to get up and I make sure that I say hello to everybody in the company every day. I walk by. Sometimes I don't see them. They might be doing something, but I make sure to make myself available and visible every single day. I think it helps. I'm not sure that it's the defining, I guess, attribute that somebody needs to be a CEO. But for me, it works really well, because I like to engage myself with everybody within the company. I like to know what they are doing, like to really know what they're doing. And how can I help them? I always say that nobody here, you know, at Rain works for me. I work for them. That's my job. Is what do you need? What are your tools? What can I get you? How can I make it easier for you? How do I make it better for you? How do I make you more successful? That's your job as a CEO. It's not that everybody there is for me. I'm there for them.
So what is on the five-year vision of Rain that's come out of these sessions, you know, these retreats that you're taking the company on also? What are you fired up about?
Yeah, these off-site strategy meetings are so good. We came back to, we wanted to strip the brand down and kind of figure out what defines Rain when it comes to product. And basically we said eyewear, because we make t-shirts, we make hats, we even have some flip-flops. We're not in the apparel business or the hat business or flip-flop business, but we just kind of make them. And they're cool, and we wouldn't make them unless we loved them and believed in them. But we really boiled it down to the nth degree of what is Rain, and it's eyewear. It's prescription eyewear, and it's sunglasses. Now, can the brand evolve from there and look for other categories to go out into? Absolutely. But before we do anything else, we need to make sure that we are the absolute very best eyewear company on the planet. And I don't pull any punches. I'll tell you who I think our biggest competitor is, and people probably laugh at me and think I'm an idiot, and I don't care if they do. It's Ray-Ban. I can't strive to be number, hey guys, let's try to knock off Persol, because they're number 8. Like, yeah, let's be number eight. I can't. No, let's be number one. Let's go after them. I don't care if they're, I don't know, what are they, 10 billion, 20 billion? They're massive, right? I don't care. I want to be number one. Whether we can or not, I don't know. But I just cannot have the mindset of us coming in eighth or ninth place. I can't do it.
How do you handle the losses, though?
Yeah, you just take them on the chin and you move forward and you stay positive and you continue to stay on track with what your strategy is. We draw up a very complex strategy of where we want the brand to go, what stores we want it to be in, who do we want to wear it, where do we go marketing, what do we want the product to look like, and we adhere to it. I always say, plan your work, but work your plan. And we do that. So we plan our work by drawing out a great strategy. And we work the strategy. If something's not working, well, we're not afraid to say, okay, we screwed up. Made a mess. Let's fix it. And let's just continue to move forward.
Was there or have there been certain pivotal moments throughout your life and career that have caused you to either reevaluate some of the decisions you've made or go in a different direction? And then did you have any, okay, here's the reason I'm going to move from Converse to Oakley or here? Or were there any personal situations or circumstances that came up and said, you know what, I need to do something different now. I need to do something a different way.
Only once, and it was while I worked at Oakley. I loved Oakley. I had so much passion and love for that brand. And I worked there for a long time. And I cared too much. And we were growing extremely fast. I think when I started there, we were about 90 million a year. When I left, we were about 600 million. So we had some massive growth. And through that growth is, you know, a lot of, you know, tension and stress and all sorts of things. So I remember walking in the warehouse one day, and we were a massive, I think we had 2,000 employees. And I'm walking, and I hadn't seen this one guy. His name was Steven. I'll never forget it. And we're walking in the warehouse, and he's walking in the other direction from me. And I walked in, like, hey, Steven, how's it going? He goes, first thing out of his mouth is, wow, you've gained weight. And I went, wow, don't candy coat it. Have I? And he goes, dude, you're heavy. And I was like, I don't really know this guy all that well. And all my friends don't tell me that, but he's right. I'm fat. Like, what am I doing? I had blood pressure issues at the time. I was under a lot of stress. I had gained weight. I'd let myself go because I was so just dug into what I was doing in my job and I took it so seriously. Wow, what a defining moment in my life. That's when I started running. I met one of the guys I worked with. His dad was an unbelievable runner. His name's Lee Eilertsen. I ran with him every single morning. I got my butt in shape. Went to the doctor, got some blood pressure medicine, and got that in better working order. But it completely changed my life, and I started looking at things completely different. And that is that, yeah, it's a job, and it's very important to me, but I'm not going to let it overrule my life. I'm not going to let it ruin my life. And I was 223 pounds at my height. Right now I'm 188. That's a lot of weight that I'd gained, and I didn't even really realize I had gotten that.
How old are you at the time?
That was probably 37, 38.
Okay, and how old are you now, if you don't mind?
57.
Okay, so work-life balance between that moment and now.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in doing some sort of exercise. When I'm at work, everybody always knows, where's Fitz? He's doing a hot lap. So a hot lap is I leave, I've been doing this for years and years, and I'll go walk. I might walk 2 miles, I might walk 8 miles, but I have my phone with me, I'm making phone calls, and I'm walking, and I walk very fast. And that to me helps balance a lot of things that I'm doing. I'm gone a lot, you know, through my career, I've traveled a ton, and it's hard to stay in shape and to, you know, really take care of yourself when you're on the road, because eating's difficult. You just have to commit yourself to it and really believe in it.
Does anybody get to join you on the hot lap?
Oh, absolutely, but they usually don't like it. Because it's like, because that's when I come up with ideas, and they're like, oh God, here comes another idea.
On that, you know, ideas, and how many, you're constantly thinking of ideas to execution, you know? how many of them do you move forward with? How many of them do you expect your team to say, okay, that just fits again with another idea, and this doesn't fit in the 5-year offsite, offsite retreat planning session that we had? Or do you have just like an idea bank, like a drawer where you just pile all this shit?
Yeah, I kind of do. It's weird. And most of them are so harebrained, they don't work. But that's okay. I'll tell you the guy that I am so impressed with ideas, and I wished I was as good as him at it. And his name is Jeff Kelly, and that's the founder of Sanuk. Jeff Kelly, you know, if you walk into a grocery store or if you walk into a trade, it doesn't matter. You'll be walking side by side, and all of a sudden, oh, where'd JK go? And he's over there, and he's picked up something that you would never see in a million years, and he's like, oh, Fitz, look at this. Check it out. How did they do? Look at how they did. Oh my God, isn't that amazing? And it's like, dude, how do you see these things? He's the guy with the ideas, and he's got the bank. My ideas are more tactical ideas, mm-hmm. more ideas of how do we make something streamlined? Like how do we ship product better? How do we make customer service be even greater than it can be right now? Those are my ideas. His ideas are ideas that are concepts that are worth $100 million. Mine are just ideas of efficiencies. I wish I thought more like him.
Can you stay through them all the way again? And you've obviously had success, and you're obviously gunning for number one in the sunglass brand. But do you have trouble with staying with the idea to execution phase because you're so energetic and so passionate and you have so many? Okay, how long is this model of sunglass going to charge me up for before we need to introduce the next line? Finishing it in a way what you start. I think some guys wrestle with that. Like, okay, we've got the ideas. It's getting the momentum. We're moving it. But that they can't get that boulder to roll downhill and get the momentum and stay with it long enough.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit unique in that, where I like to follow things through. I do. And I don't have type of brain that a creator has, because creators, I feel, are the ones that kind of jump like, oh, I'm off to the next thing. Like I developed and designed this eyewear, I designed this shoe. Oh God, I'm over that. I'm under the next shoe, right?
Yep.
For me, I'm not. I'm more black and white. I'm not as gray as air. So I'm able to stay on point when it comes to the ideas that I have until I find out that they don't work. Then I scrap them and then I leave them. So I'm not afraid to do that. But
so also in your career, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but you've always worked for other brands. You haven't actually been a founder or started a brand on your own. Is that accurate?
No, I actually did start and I was a founder of a brand, and it was a West Coast footwear designer label that was around for about 2 years and actually did very, very well. Unfortunately, it was during 2008 when the economy was crashing, and I crashed with it. And it was a defining moment for me in my career, in that it was the first time that I failed. Epic. It was an epic fail. I lost almost everything that I had because I put so much into it. But it was such a huge loss for me. But it made me a better man. It made me a better husband. It made me a better dad. It made me a better businessman. Everything. Better friend. Because I had to count on others at that point. My goal was, don't lose my house, don't lose other things and that were important to me. I didn't care about cars or anything else. It was a matter of survival at that point. Mm-hmm. And then I knew I had to reinvent myself and get my butt back out there and work my butt off and prove myself, and I did. But that was very, very difficult. I'm not afraid to take chances and be an entrepreneur and start a company. But I'll tell you, that was a very tough time, because we actually even had an article on the brand in Entrepreneur Magazine of hot brands to look for in 2008. Mm-hmm. And we were one of them. We were growing that fast. We were in, Nordstrom right away out of the gate. We were in Fred Siegel, American Rag, Mario's, you name it. We were in all the top boutiques. And then once 2008 hit, it crashed. Everybody was returning orders. The stock market was down 500 to 800 points every single day. And we were all just fighting to hang on, and I had a warehouse full of shoes that I had paid for. So at that point, I was in survival mode, and I had to sell off all those shoes, sold them to Ross. I remember the price, $7.23 each. It was tough to swallow. And then I had to had to get myself back into the industry and start working again to provide my family. And I told myself that it's going to take me a little bit of time, but I'm going to reinvent myself and I'm going to be more successful this time around than I was the last time. And fortunately for me, I got lucky and things fell into place and I have been.
So you mentioned you get lucky, but I don't totally believe that it's about luck. Like, you had a plan to reinvent yourself and you knew what you needed to do. What were the steps you actually took from a personal standpoint of rebuilding some self-confidence and then getting back out there and choosing and finding what your next position is going to be?
I had a friend of mine, his name is Aaron Bailey. He's actually the CEO of another eyewear company. He and I worked together at Oakley. Great guy. And he had gone through a somewhat similar situation a few years prior to me going through it. And he and I had a call at 7 a.m. every Tuesday morning, and it was my check-in with him. He was just checking on me. Fitz, how you doing? What's going on? What are you doing? How are you reinventing yourself? And it was such a absolute lucky thing for me to have a guy like him to really, I was able to draw off of his experiences of what he had gone through. And he had completely reinvented himself and reestablished himself in his brand of his own name in the industry. And so I needed to do the same thing. He was a huge resource for me. But it was also just a lot of hard work. It was, okay, I got to get a job. What am I going to go do? And I drove from Huntington Beach every day to La Jolla down in San Diego and worked for a footwear company called Gordon Rush. And I was vice president of sales and worked my way up to become executive vice president of the company. But what was interesting is when I first started there, so I had just gone through this financial, like, oh my gosh, like I had no money. I was out. And I got a job, and I'm like, all right, I'm stoked. Like, we're back on track. Within a month and a half of me starting there, they filed bankruptcy. And a receiver came in and started running the company. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I just started a job, and now, what, am I out of a job? Well, fortunately for me, they picked me to run the company and to try to revive the company and bring it back. And we did. And to me, is still the crown jewel of what I've been able to do in my career, was taking a brand that was literally in receivership and bankrupt and brought them back to life. Today they're doing actually quite well. So it's good.
It's amazing. I mean, where I was going with it initially, before I made the big mistake, okay, and then he said I did found this company, tell that amazing story. But where I was going with it originally was being able to take ownership of a brand and a business and feeling of ownership and being a truly part of something that you also haven't been the founder of. And you've had really successful roles at some major, major brands and major companies. How do you take kind of ownership, that feeling of really being a part of it and running it, even from a CEO position? How do you identify with that when you're not actually the founder? But is it values? Is it time? Is it connection with the founders? Everybody wants to be an entrepreneur. There's some buzz on entrepreneurship, but not everybody can start and be a founder of a company also. And I think there's a lot to be said for working and aligning with great brands also that you can help make better and they can help make you better as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm at heart a loyal guy, and sometimes that's good and sometimes it's not good. I've always been, wherever I've worked, I've just, for some reason, I just immersed myself into it, and it's a connection I have with the owner. I think a lot of it is also when I did have my company and I failed, that I know what that feels like. And I don't want anybody else to feel that. Even though it was the best thing to happen to me, really, because I became a better person. But I just don't wish that upon anybody. So for me, I think I identify with the owner and the founder of a company, and I respect what they've done. I know what it's like to work 20 hours and fall asleep on the couch with the computer in your lap. And you're dealing with factories overseas, and you're trying to figure out cash flow, and you're trying to figure out how you're going to make payroll this week, and all sorts of stuff. A lot of stress. So I identify with the founders very well, but just at the center of who I am, I'm a loyal guy. And like I said, sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's not good. But I can't change who I am. I am who I am.
Mm-hmm. Does that lead you sometimes maybe to stay, maybe stay longer, Or do you, are there certain things, okay, I'm falling back on this natural tendency and maybe to be a loyal guy or to do this or not do that. Do you have any kind of hacks or tricks that you even play on yourself to say, okay, that's the way I naturally am wired, but I really know I would be better off doing this?
Early on, yes, I wouldn't leave. In fact, I probably stayed at Oakley too long. I probably should have left a little bit earlier, but I was loyal. Jim Gennard, the founder, amazing guy, and Mike Parnell, who's the CEO, truly like my mentor and great guy. But I did stay there too long. I mean, I was dealing with high blood pressure. I got fat. Mm-hmm. I was having issues.
Yeah.
But I did learn later on, you have to be able to table that, and you have to take care of your family first.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always made the right decision on what's right for my family after I left Oakley.
I like that circle back to family. What do you and your family really like to do?
Well, heck, we just went to the Angel game last night and watched them lose to Detroit.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, still a baseball geek?
Yeah, I mean, but my son and I, we golf mm-hmm. together. My daughter and I, we play tennis together. We hang out in the backyard, all of us. My wife and I, we go to concerts a lot. We're music freaks. We just saw Smokey Robinson last week. We've got America coming up. We saw Paul McCartney, took the kids to Paul McCartney. My son's very first concert years ago was Paul McCartney, so
Kind of
cool to say he's, the kids got to say they saw a Beatle. So my wife, we love to go out and have a glass of wine, go to dinner, but we like to keep the family together. I mean, my kids are 19 and 17 and they still like to be with their mom and dad. I'm very stoked about that because it's very easy for 19 and 17 year olds to go like, oh, dad, mom, you guys are so uncool. Mm-hmm. Like, no, we're still okay.
Yeah, that's something we're dealing with right now, too, which is how many more summers, how much more time do we have that they actually want to be with us? And we're kind of right on the tip with one. Right now, it's like, man, we're so excited to have you back from camp. We want to see you. It's like, well, where was like all the... You used to be excited when you came home, too. Now it's like 2-3 more weeks at the camp would have probably made you really, really happy. So, next phase... You're 57, you said now. How's midlife for you?
I love it. The one thing that I don't like is you find like, oh, why is my neck so stiff? Or I'm not recuperating from that run, so like what the heck? That part I don't like. What I do like is I listen to my body more and I pay attention to my body more, which I wished I had done when I was younger. Because I wouldn't probably be feeling a lot of the things I'm feeling now. I'm in really good health now, and so I feel very fortunate with that. But I love it. I love where my kids are at right now. I love where my family is. I love my neighbors, my friends. I mean, at this age, you don't care. You don't care what people think. It's like, hey, you got body odor. I don't care. It doesn't matter anymore. You just don't care anymore. It's like, whatever.
So you can take that hot lap and just go back to the office and not give a shit. Okay, I'm not changing for this.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I'm where I'm at right now.
Fitz is a little gaming. It's all good.
Well, that's awesome. Jeff, I want to thank you so much for doing this today. It's been awesome to hear your story, learn more about Rain, learn more about you personally, being a part of this. So... thank you, and also thanks to Aaron at Life Aid, one of my other favorite brands, for hooking us up and connecting. This has been a lot of fun sitting outside in Manhattan Beach, talking to one of my coolest brands and CEO out there. So thanks, man. I really enjoyed this a lot.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And by the way, this place where we're having this interview at does not suck. We're overlooking the beach right now.
No, it does not suck at all. Kirk Moquin, thank you so much for your generosity, letting us stay here, use your place also. All right, Midlife Mail Podcast. Greg Scheinman here. If you like what you've heard, give us that thumbs up, that great rating. Spread the word out to all of your friends. And if you want to find out more about Rain, you are going to...
Rain.com, R-A-E-N.com.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Midlife Mail Podcast. Please leave us that 5-star rating, that positive review. If you want to reach out to me, greg@midlifemail.com. Let me know what you think. Comments, questions I should ask, men we should have on the show.
subscribe to the newsletter at gregscheinman.com. And let's go. I'll see you next week.